about to feed them to the sharks right now.
Get them hype right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is on.
Yeah.
Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it goes.
Right.
Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's real.
It's time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know.
No.
But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.
Welcome to episode 6 of the BJJ campaign. My name is Jeff Boone. I'm an A3, blue belt, one stripe.
Nice.
That's right, Philly.
That's
one
right.
Stripe, baby.
This is Phil Kors, A2, white belt, 4 stripes.
Ryan Leggett, black belt, no stripes.
And your gi size, sir?
I'm an A4.
He is an A4, folks. Let me just tell you.
A solid full A4.
Yes, sir. So, Ryan, thanks for coming on the program today. We appreciate it. You know, Ryan is the newest black belt in the Fight to Win team. He went out back in October.
Yes.
To train at with the Gracies out in California, Long Beach?
Torrance,
mm-hmm. California. The Gracie Academy. And tested for his black belt. Then we'll get to a little bit of that, but I'm going to hand it over to Philly to get things started off.
All right. So the first other thing, not only did you get the black belt, but you had a baby recently, right?
We did. Solid October for me. Had my son Abel, who was healthy, 10 and a half pounds. Almost. He's a solid like A2 already.
Boy.
And tested for and passed my black belt test. So I got my black belt. Solid month.
So I don't know anything about babies, but is he standing in base yet?
He will, if he wants to live in my house.
I don't know.
I mean, a little bit about babies. You know how to make them, Phil. You just don't.
Well,
I mean,
I don't know the time frames when they start walking and talking.
Gotcha.
Stuff. That's all new.
Yeah, it's new to me too. So I understand your confusion.
I actually must have loved that you were going to test for your black belt right after.
Oh, man. So, the worst part is, you know, so my child was born, it was actually born in September, but so I had a newborn at home, and obviously I'm coming up on my black belt test, so I'm going to train 3, 4, 5 days a week, easily, you know, going in random times, meeting with upper belts, doing kind of private stuff with those guys, and just rep, drill. And the whole time I'm leaving her at home with a brand new baby. And, you know, it's like, hey, I'm really sorry. I got to go. And you kind of run out the door. And, man, she was super great. And it's very important to have that, you know, support network that supports what you're doing. You know, I was doing, you know, her jiu-jitsu and her came along in my life about the same time. So she understands my schedule, understands my passion for what I do. And, you know, it was definitely tough. I'd get a lot of eye rolls and heavy exhales, but, you know, she was super supportive.
That's awesome.
That's really cool. So how did you get started?
How did I get started? I feel like I have the same I got started story as everybody that's been training a little while. Is I started doing striking. I started in college. We had a karate club. It was an Ishinru Karate Club. And really awesome instructor, not the typical karate guy who I tend to bash once in a while, but, you know, legitimate, excellent striker, very open-minded to different styles. We did a lot of what I found out later, like Muay Thai, a lot of throwing to his knowledge level. I mean, mm-hmm. Excellent striker, fantastic. I'm still impressed with his karate, so I still hold some karate folks in very high regard because of my experience with this guy.
Was it Kyokushin? Was that?
Ishinru.
Okay, gotcha.
And so we had a guy come in who actually spent a summer in Torrance and trained at the Gracie Academy and came back and ended up in our karate club somehow. I don't know how that worked out, but ended up back in our karate club. Probably had 2-3 months worth of training. Probably a solid one stripe white belt, maybe. And he came back and said, hey, let me show you the stuff that I learned out there. And, oh, man, just destroyed all of us. And we're just like, oh, my God, what is this? Voodoo. And man, my eyes were just open. I was blown away. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I started seeking out of school. I found Professor Greg Thompson. He's a Hoist Black Belt in Fayetteville. And I would drive. When I lived at home about an hour away, and where I was in college, it was about 2 hours away, but I would periodically drive back and forth and go train with Professor Thompson. And that was my intro. That's how I got started. And kind of moving between work, I ended up kind of bouncing between gyms a little bit till I moved to Charlotte in 2010 and became a part of the Fight to Win family. And man, the rest is history.
Was the first rule of Karate Club that you didn't speak of Karate Club?
No, man. It's funny because there's another guy that was in one of my best friends to this day. He's a Hobson Moore brown belt now. So there's a lot of some decent talent that came out of there. Another guy's a roommate, one of my roommates in college. He's super sporadic trainer, but he just got his blue belt. So I mean, it was a good group of guys. You know, we trained hard. It was super funny looking back. I remember putting in the Bosch Rutten DVDs or VHS. It might have been a VHS. I don't remember.
It was VHS.
Putting in the doinga, the doinga, the doinga. doing that kind of silly stuff, like trying to watch the videos and, you know, because we were just all got super turned on to grappling all of a sudden, and there was really nothing out there, you know, so we're trying to, you know, do this stuff. And we'd roll around in the living room. I remember breaking furniture in our apartment. We're stupid.
Were the other guys as big as you?
One was bigger. One was bigger. Yeah, one was bigger. And the other guy, a little bit smaller. But, yeah, we would, you know, it was college, so there might have been a little alcohol involved once in a while.
Sure. Or,
yeah, I definitely remember breaking a living room, like coffee table, 100%.
Like, that very clearly.
While the guy who actually lived there was like getting ready in the back room and came out, he's like, "What the hell?" And we're like, "Sorry."
It's like that Chris Farley Saturday Night Live skit.
My bad.
So another question that a lot of people have, once, because we don't really see it, obviously, with how good you are, you know, but you must have had some challenges along the way.
Oh, absolutely.
But what might some of those been?
Man, I've actually listened to all your podcasts, and it's so funny that everything you guys have talked about, the struggles that you went through, the confusion, seeing things kind of fourth, fifth, sixth time, and it's new every time.
Yeah.
You know, I can 100% relate to everything you're talking about. There's nothing special about me. There was no special journey. I'm no prodigy at all. I just kept showing up.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. There's no magic pill. There's no silver bullet. I was never super talented when I went in there. I never just saw stuff and got it. I felt like an idiot a lot of times because I would see things and, you know, I'm like, okay, I got that. And, you know, like we break and go drill and I'm like, I don't even know what we just looked at.
What position were we starting from?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I'm like, did I have a stroke? Like, I don't know why I don't understand what's happening. And so, I 100% relate with some of the things you guys have said about being lost, being confused, just trying to figure out how to tie your belt on right as a victory for that day. And, you know, you go over four techniques in class, and you're like, okay, I think I can do that. And you come back the next day, and you can't even remember the four techniques you did, much less remember how to do them. You don't even remember what you went over.
Yeah.
Because it all just jumbles together. And this, but I totally relate to that.
Thus, why everyone out there needs to go get themselves My BJJ Notes, our premier sponsor of this podcast, because you can write those notes in your phone. It's super. The app is unbelievable. You can record any techniques that you do, all the Friday classes that you teach, they're all right here in My BJJ Notes. So shout out to Mike.
That's it.
And My BJJ Notes.
Yeah, that's about how it's pronounced.
Yes, sounds right.
That is funny, though, that you mentioned that, because I've been working with a lot of the newer people coming in fundamentals and stuff, and we had that review period, and I'll be like, when was the last time you were here? And they're like, Monday. I'm like, okay, what did we do on Monday? You know, because I go every day, and I forget maybe what we went over that day. And they'll be like, I don't remember at all. You know, we did the thing on the ground. I remember that. You know, mm-hmm. that's like, yeah. So
yeah, I do the same. Might help. You know, when I kind of go around and check up on everybody in the beginning of class, and, mm-hmm. you know, some people have random questions about stuff, and I just go and, you know, say hello and all that. And, you know, I don't even start with that. I'm like, show me something we've covered. Mm-hmm. You know, I give them the opportunity to teach it to me because there's a lot of value in that, just kind of repeating it back. And it's, you get the most blank stare sometimes, like, yeah. You know, and it's, I, again, it's no judgment because I've been there. I 100% have been there. It is very relatable for me. It's, some of the stuff we do is extremely easy, but extremely difficult at the same time. Like I can, you know, I could demo a technique for you and be like, these are step 1, 2, 3, 4, super easy, right? And you're like, yeah. And you go to try to do it and you're like, I don't remember that there were steps. You know, it gets,
yeah.
I don't know where the translation gets lost at, but.
Well, just like you said, you just got to keep on showing up. And you mentioned to me the other day, Ryan, that, you know, you spent, you know, some of your training was spent, maybe even misspent, you know, as far as being a blue belt for 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to the audience out there, what kind of advice would you give them? Because that's what we're trying to do, right? Is we're trying to give them the advice where we screwed up, right? Right, where we could have been better. What did you, in that time, you know, was it just that you didn't have as consistent a training schedule, that you know, what could you advise to other people who may actually be in that same spot as you were?
Man, there were a lot of things. And, you know, I moved in that time frame. I took 6 months off, you know, going to the police academy.
Sure.
And I took some time off with moving. It wasn't a consistent 4 years of training.
Sure.
There was a lot of gaps in there. You know, coming to a new school, you're kind of starting over. I would say the biggest thing, and I think you guys have already jumped this hurdle, and which is great, was my mind was, and I didn't realize it then, but looking back, was 100% ego. And everybody says, you know, I'm going to leave my ego at the door. Man, it's hard. You know, I don't like to lose. I've never been a fan. Mm-hmm. I hate losing. I hate it. And I always interpret, you know, I always view like, man, if I'm going to roll, I've got to win. You know, I've got to compete. I've got to take it to this guy. And that was my mindset for, you know, even though it was never anything personal, I always loved it. It was always fun. It never became anything beyond that. But I'm just a competitive, I have a very competitive nature about me.
Right.
I didn't like to lose. And so I translated that to I've got to win these roles. And I let a lot of technique go. And I compensated with size, strength, athleticism. So again, I'm a bigger dude, and I made that work for me. And I would beat a lot of people. I would beat purple belts as a blue belt. I would beat higher level people, and I would be like, "Yeah, I'm awesome. I must be really good because I beat somebody that's a higher belt than me." And man, it took a while before I realized that I'm not competing against the purple belt or the brown belt or the black belt. Man, I'm just competing against who I was yesterday. That's the only person I need to be competing against is the person I was the day before. Because it can be very frustrating to hold yourself to a standard of I've got to be better than you, or I've got to be better than you, or I've got to be better than this guy, or man, I get beat up all the time, you know, on the mat. It's hard to hold yourself to that standard. And I think it can be almost toxic. But to just try to be better than you were the day before, I think that's, and I think you guys are there, so I think your maturity level for where you are in your campaign is a lot further along than what mine was when I was in your shoes.
Well, that's because I'm old. That's because Phil is smarter than me. So that's why it's there. But if I can like delve a little deeper into that, do you think that whenever you were in that sort of particular part of your campaign, that it hindered you in the fact that you weren't allowing yourself to get in those bad positions? And I'll give you an illustration just from my own rolling and what I think that we do so well at Fight to Win is that is positional sparring, you know, and deliberately getting with the upper belts to see where you're at as far as far as that goes, getting in that disadvantageous position against those upper belts to see if the things that you do against the other belts who are the lower belts than you, and you have, you know, you think you have a good mount escape, but then you get with an upper belt and you're like, well, I don't escape shit because right. I can't do it here. Right? Is that something?
Absolutely. 100%. And man, it takes the ego away from it because, you know, if I pair you up with Phil and, you know, I'm like, all right, Phil, I want you to work your mount escapes. Jeff, give him 70%. So now I've taken all the pressure off of you of winning because I put a handicap on you. I said you can only go 70%. If he escapes, bump it up to 80%. Jeff, don't go for any submissions.
It's really about 50% with Phil, with me keeping him in the mouth. But yeah, you know, I get what you're saying.
But if I give you that handicap of don't do this, you know, don't go for a submission, don't give 100%, just make Phil work. Man, I've taken away the competition there. I've taken away there's no real losing for you now because it's not a me versus you role. This is just another drill. You can't lose while we're drilling. So, man, we remove the possibility of that bug being planted. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I would challenge all those out there listening to not depend on the instructor to tell you that. Mm-hmm. I would 100%. Challenge all those out there listening to, you know, I said it before on the podcast. I'll say it again probably 1,000 more times. You train 50% for yourself. You train 50% for your partner. And if you're just there locking someone down who may not be as big as you, may not be as experienced as you, then they're never going to learn how to do it. So that's what I would challenge everyone to and take it that next step further to say, don't wait for your professor to say, only go 50, 70%. Let them experience success. Right? Because success then will get them more enthused about it and get them more enthused about training, and then you have more training partners and then the whole team gets better all at once.
Probably takes some experience to realize that though. Like when you're first starting out, you're not gonna know those boundaries, like where it is, where how much effort you need to put in. By effort, I mean, you know, your 70% number for giving resistance that's beneficial. Yeah,
especially
to
when you're new, you're still kind of floundering around yourself, so you don't really, it's harder when you're new. Mm-hmm. But like I said, that's why we make those specific positional things. Mm-hmm. You know, if we work on a mount escape, just work that mount escape we just learned.
Yeah,
remember we did mount control, maintaining the mount a couple weeks ago. Try to do that. If you weren't there for that, just try to hold on top, don't fall off. You know, we'll keep it simple.
Yeah, I've said since we started Sunday rolls that's my favorite format, is that back and forth between a free roll and then a specific position. Because if I'm rolling with somebody better than me, which is most people, I'm not going to get on their back. I'm not going to be in the top mount. And if I am, I'm going to be there for 5 seconds, you know, and then I'm off.
Well, we as human beings, I don't even know if it's, maybe it's an American thing. I don't know. But we like to see our progress. We like our attaboys. That's why we like our stripes. That's why we like our belts to change color, because it gives us that reassurance that, hey, we're doing good. We're good boys. You know, we're doing good. We're improving. And that's a representation of our improvement. But we don't get that every day. You know, those promotions are few and far between. And the higher you go, the further apart they get.
Sure.
But when you're every day and I can, you know, if I beat you, or if, you know, if I tap out Jeff, or I tap out you, and, you know, I feel good about myself, I'm using that as the reassurance to say, hey, look how good I'm doing. This is the feedback I'm giving myself. Look how good I'm doing. Because you don't see your progression every day. And I think we had this discussion after class last week, that, man, you don't really see how good you're doing or how much you're progressing day to day because you're so close to it. Sometimes it takes that brand new person to come in the door and you start working with them and you're showing them, you know, all this stuff, and all of a sudden you realize how much you know. And you're like, wow, I didn't realize I knew all that. You didn't realize it till you compared yourself to somebody who knew nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, that was me 6 months ago. Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe I do know a lot. Maybe I am learning a lot. you know, but you can't, it's hard to see that every day. So, you know, you want that feedback. At least for me, I'm just trying to imagine what it was like. You know, I'm trying to imagine my mindset. I feel confident that's probably it. That, you know, looking back, that 100% ego-driven, you know, I've got to win. I've got to tap this guy. I can't get swept. You know, you put a lot of pressure on yourself. And
another thing, too, though, that might have been, that's, from what I understand, way different is going when you were a blue belt was what, 8-9 years ago, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how, what was your, like, I have access to you and John, you know, all these upper belts constantly, and Luke and Brent and,
yeah, you know, everybody it wasn't else, like that.
That's instant, really good feedback. Whereas if, you know, the only person, you know, who had a step up on me maybe was Jeff, and everybody else was about the same level as me, the competition probably would be more competitive between us, because
a purple belt was a rarity.
Right.
Purple belt was a rarity. The black belts were unicorns. You never saw them. But, you know, to have a purple belt on the mat was a huge deal. It was a huge deal. A blue belt was a big deal. You know, you saw a blue belt, they carried a lot of respect. You know, it was just, they just weren't around, at least in this area, at least in, you know, the places I trained.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, and I trained with some of the earliest black belts in the state. You know, some of the horse's first black belts. And you just didn't see very many upper belts. So it was a lot of lower level guys. And it wasn't the, you know, we talked about this before, the academies weren't near as welcoming. It was full of a lot of tough people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that kind of facilitated that mindset or that the competitive nature, because you had a lot of young, tough guys in there that came in, and, you know, we went at it. I mean, we had fun. Don't get me wrong. It was a very, very fun thing. You know, we really enjoyed beating the crap out of each other, but that's how we measured success.
Yeah.
Was beating the crap out of each other.
What was the trigger? What got you past that? What got you past that, that ego-driven? Because I can say right now, I mean, you're not at all that now. And so, what was there a trigger that prompted you to
good instruction?
Yeah,
finding good instructors who can guide you down the right road. Finding Steve when I got here in 2010 was huge for me. You know, because, you know, he would beat the crap out of me. He still does. True. You know, and it's very humbling. And, you know, to have somebody, and he's, if you've trained with Steve at all, he's very frank. He doesn't sugarcoat much, which I love. That's, man, one of the main reasons I'm with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's very to the point. This is where you suck. You need to fix this. And, okay, I can live with that. This is where I suck at. I need to fix this. I can come back. I can work on it. Okay, you suck less, but do this again. You know, okay. You know, and just having good instruction. You know, somebody seeing that flaw, somebody seeing that hold up, and fixing it. You know, and everybody, you're always going to have that, especially coming up, white, blue, purple, even, you know, you're going to have just moments in time where you do dumb stuff and you don't realize it's dumb.
Yeah.
Until you have somebody to set you down and be like, hey, this is the way we do things. This is, you need to do things this way. And they say that because they've been there, they've seen it before, and they know what they're talking about. And you need to have trust in them that they do know what they're talking about. And I did, and it worked out super well for me. You know, but yeah, just having a good instructor to fix that, because nobody comes in knowing what they're doing.
And I feel super lucky that it's different now, obviously, because I mean, we have, what, Charlie's there every day, mm-hmm. helping, John's there every day, you're there most of the time. Like, it's, there's always somebody who's super knowledgeable about this stuff that can always help and immediately keep it, like, I'll do dumb stuff all the time when we roll, and you know, that can, they can immediately correct it. Good instruction, like you said, that's
huge. Awesome. It's huge.
So I'm going to skip a little bit ahead. This is probably one of my favorite questions.
Sure.
the jiu-jitsu in law enforcement.
All right.
Like, how do you see that kind of applied?
Man, that's the most important tool in my tool belt. 100%. I wouldn't trade it for anything. There's so many aspects of jiu-jitsu that help me with my job. and some stuff translated. It goes back and forth, but...
And Ryan, just for the audience, tell the audience your job, what you do with law enforcement.
I do fugitive apprehension, and I also do special weapons and tactics. So I do a little pretty hands-on stuff.
Yeah, not with really nice people.
No, not with very nice people at all, typically. They're just misunderstood. They're just misunderstood. Lost sheep. And innocent until proven guilty, Jeff.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. I got that tagline.
All right.
But so, yeah, go forward with things.
So, yeah, I deal with a lot of really not nice people a lot of times. And that's another reason I'm super passionate about jiu-jitsu, because I know it works, because I use it. I use it. You know, a lot of people come in and they train, and good for them. You know, I hope that people never end up in a situation outside of the gym where they have to fight or defend themselves or, you know, use jiu-jitsu to save their life. But, man, I do that on a regular basis. I have to put my hands on people all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, regardless of what tools you have on your tool belt, if you're going to handcuff somebody, I've got to physically make contact with you to put the handcuffs on. There's no other way to do it. They haven't came up with a way to throw the handcuffs across the room and they wrap around your wrist. They just don't have that yet. So I've got to physically control you.
Elon Musk is working on that.
I hope so. But, and you know, you don't cuff suspects that are not under control. You know, so I've got to physically control you. Then I have to handcuff you. Man, what do we learn in jiu-jitsu? How to physically control people. Mm-hmm. Man, it's huge. And it has kept me from hurting people. Like I've never had to tase anybody. I've never had to use my OC spray or my pepper spray. I've never used my baton against anybody. I've always been lucky enough to be able to use my jiu-jitsu to safely effect arrest. And I wish it was something that everyone had. I think the situation we're in as a country would be a lot different if that were the case. And I think Henner said it, you know, during his Gracie Combatives thing, that, you know, an officer without training is an officer without options. And that's never good. Mm. You know, you end up in bad situations. But man, these, you know, you're talking about, when you guys train, how many hours do you say you train a week?
10 to 15.
Okay, 10 or 15. You might get 8 hours a year if you're lucky of defensive tactics training as a police officer.
That's really tough.
So how good do you think you would be if you trained 8 hours a year? How effective would you be at...
Your first stripe would be at like 5 years of training.
Right. You know, what do you think your retention level would be? It's hard to remember stuff you did in class yesterday. Yeah. Well, imagine trying to remember something you did in an in-service class 7 or 8 months ago. You know, good luck. And not, you know, you're not in a padded room either. You're not in a matted room with people that are teammates that are rooting for your success. These are people that are not friendly. They either really want to get away or they really want to hurt you.
Yeah.
So the stakes are very different. And, you know, it's a tough position. You know, when you don't have that level of training, you're forced to go to other measures to, man, defend yourself, because I'm going to go home at night. You know, don't put me in a position where I've got to choose between me and you, because I'm choosing me every time. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to go home. Yeah, your rights are going to stop at my safety. Your rights end at my safety. They're no longer there anymore. As soon as I'm safe, you're good again. You know, but yeah, it's been crucial for me to have that.
That's why I'm so glad to see so many law enforcement taking the training into their own hands. We have what?
Dude, I was surprised. I talked to everybody.
Eight of the people
in
our academy that are law enforcement that are...
Yeah, when I found out, and everybody was like, yeah, I'm a cop. And I was like, oh, it's kind of weird. But, you know, think about it. There should be way more, you know?
Way more. I work with probably roughly 2,000 other people, and I can probably count on fingers and toes and have left over the people that actually train.
That seems really...
Gosh, that's all of the people in our academy.
That's...
Ours and Charlotte School.
You know, that's not good. You know, that's it could be a lot better. but it's, I don't know, you know, I fell in love with it. Obviously, you guys fell in love with it. It's hard to understand why people don't, you know, get it.
It's really hard to understand that. Really,
you know, but they have stuff going on in their lives, and I don't know. It seems like it seems like that would be a huge priority for people, that especially in this line of work, to have that. But
I'm obviously like super ignorant of being a cop and all that stuff anyway, and what it's like. But it seems like a really high stress situation where, you know, high stakes, high stress, and you're in that close physical.
Yeah, it can be, yeah, for sure. The stress kind of goes away to an extent, but the stakes don't. The stakes are still pretty high.
Yeah.
The stakes are always pretty high. So, yeah, to be able to have that confidence in yourself. And that's, I talk about this a lot in class, too. You can't fake confidence.
Yeah.
You just can't fake it. There's a lot of stuff you can fake. You can't fake confidence. And man, that gets you a long ways too. Just to be able to look somebody in their eye, hey man, don't do this. And that's worked for me a ton. You know, just that simple. You know, when somebody's about to do something stupid, mm-hmm. you know, don't do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I'd listen to him. He's never told me that, and then he submitted me. So, I mean,
you signed the waiver.
All right, well, you teach our fundamentals class every Friday.
I do.
And one of the things that
we've Mark. Always,
yeah, one of the things we've always joked about, I noticed it probably the second class I went to, by the fourth technique, three of them were your favorite. And
yes.
I love it because it's like, if I'm going to a class and they're like, yeah, this one kind of sucks, doesn't work, but I'm going to show you anyway, you know, obviously that's no fun. But I thought that was funny. But you've talked about how, you know, you roll pretty much exclusively with the fundamentals program that we have. That's your toolbox. That's your game. And obviously you're pretty successful with it. So just thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm pretty boring. I'm not going to do anything cool or fancy. You know, I don't know. I feel like I had a hard enough time going through and learning the fundamentals. I was like, let me get good at those before I move on to anything else. And I'm 11 years later and I still haven't moved on to anything else. I'm still trying to get good at those. And it's really the truth. It 100% is the truth. I'm like, man, there's a guard pass tonight we're going to go over. It's one of my favorite guard passes. You know, I use it all the time. You know, and you can't just be like, hey, you're lying. Like, no, I'll pass your guard with this later tonight. You know, I use this stuff. I use it all the time. And, of course, those are going to be my favorite. The only reason they're my favorites is because they've been successful for me.
Yeah.
You know, you're not, if you suck at something and you keep doing it, you try it, keep trying it, it sucks, it fails. You're probably going to move on to something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's not for me. You know,
yeah.
That technique's not for me. I'm not going to do that. You hear it all the time. You know, people are like, oh, I can't triangle. My legs are too short. So they move on. They don't try it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they find some reason that this technique's not for them. But when you find something you're good at, you do it all the time, you know, because you have success with it. And, you know, that's, you'll especially see that in this phase of your game. You're going to find something that you'll be abnormally good at. It'll pop up at some point.
Can't wait for that.
It'll pop up at some point. Or at least you'll be better at one thing than you are other stuff.
Yeah. No, you know, we talk about that.
You'll find something. Yeah. And then you'll start using that one thing a lot. And then you'll start, well, okay, people are kind of catching on to my one thing. Can I layer that one thing with another thing? You know, you'll have success with that. And then, like, people start to catch on to that a little bit. All right, can I layer this with this and layer it with one more thing? And that's, man, you don't realize it, but you're building your game. You know, because we put, you know, have a puzzle piece here with our guard passing, a puzzle piece here with our guard retention, a puzzle piece here with our escapes, a puzzle piece here with our arm bars. And say you have a good arm bar from guard. You know, I'm going to transition that to a triangle from guard. I'll transition that to a scissor sweep. And all of a sudden, these puzzle pieces start building, and now you're starting to see a picture because you started building one area, you know? But all my stuff is really from that. I don't have anything that I like to do. That, not saying there's anything wrong with any other stuff. It's great. If it works for you, awesome. That's just what I've done. I feel like I've had somewhat of a level of success with it, and that's what I do. I don't want to trick anybody. Yeah. And I don't want to hit you with some choke and you're like, oh man, I've never seen that before. And then I try it again and it doesn't work because you've seen it now. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I want to be like, it's that damn guard pass again. You know, like here he comes and there's nothing I can do about it. And he's passed my guard.
And we talked about that. That's demoralizing.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I've only been rolling for a year, right? I know most of what you're doing as you're doing it. Doesn't matter. You're still just doing it. I'm like, he's doing that again.
Yep, there you go.
And then he's going to, yep, okay, he did it. You know?
Yep, there you go.
The process plays out. And it's demoralizing a little bit. Like, not that I expect to compete with you, but like there's been a lot of times when I'm rolling being new where I'm just like, dude, I don't even know what just happened. Mm-hmm. Like, I was over here and now he's behind me. What is that? You know? But with you, it's not necessarily like that where it's very that slow, methodical, just one position to the next, and you're just getting better and better, and all of a sudden your knee's on my chest, and I'm like, here we are again.
And we're here again, and I still can't get out. You know, and that's, but man, that's super fun to me. You know, like I enjoy doing that. You know, and
we know, Ryan.
But you know, I promise you, it hasn't always been that way. And you know, and I think you mimic yourself after the people you train with or you look up to, and John is like that a lot. You know, sure. John will, you know, I remember, this is one of many examples, but I remember I was working my knee shield and I'm doing really well with everybody. And he just would blow through it like a hot knife through butter. And it took me about after like the 15th time before I finally broke down. And I'm like, my God, what are you doing? Like, what kind of voodoo are you using? And, you know, he gave me a few pointers to fix it. And man, all of a sudden my knee shield got better. You know, he wasn't slicing through it like butter anymore. You know, I'm like, okay, let me build upon this. You know, and you just keep adding to it and layering it. And, you know, but he's super like that. You know what's coming. Like, mm-hmm. Man, if John gets a Kimura grip on you, you better address that immediately. You know, there should be
unlike Phil,
yeah,
he likes to let go.
There should be like red lights flashing and alarms going off in your head, and like, you know, forget everything else that's happening. You better start addressing those grips. That's going to be a problem soon.
Yeah, he'll do that thing where like I'm trying to pass terribly, and I'll just kind of like grab my elbow for a second to let me know that it's out there.
Yeah,
like even times, and then it's too late. So
I don't even care what position he's in. It's so weird, you know, like. You better address it. You'd be like, oh, you can't do anything from there, and I'm rolled over. You know, you're like, and he hasn't let go yet. He's going to torque my shoulder. You know, so it's like one of those things. Like, ah, here it is again. But there's nothing I can do about it. Right. You know, and that's a really powerful thing. That's a really cool thing. You know, to know, and that gives you confidence in what you're doing. Like, is this guy not going to fall for my trick? I'll tell you what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's I want to have that mentality, that confidence in what I'm doing. I don't want to trick you. I don't want to trick you. I want to be that confident in what I'm doing, that confident in my technique that it works regardless.
Right.
And that's something I still try to work at all the time.
Yeah, it's noticeable.
So just to kind of, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about it, but just to kind of switch gears to, and you know, for those newbies out there, you know, that's our target audience really, is the people who are just starting jiu-jitsu, trying to get better faster. And one of the things Phil and I were talking about the other night is the value that we get out of staying after class just to clean the mats. I know you kind of shared with me, and I'd like you to share it with our audience, but one of the stories about when you were out in Torrance at the Gracie Academy, and the story that Hoyce and Horian shared with you.
So we had the opportunity to train with, you know, some of the greats of the sport or the art. We had Hoyce, his brother Hoyler, his brother Horian. They're on the mat, you know, so this is, you know, legends of jiu-jitsu that are surrounding you, and you know, they're telling stories, and it's the group on the mat is not white belts. It's predominantly black belts and brown belts. So very, very, very high level audience. And, you know, one of the stories that I want to say it was Hoyler who was telling the story, that his father, Elio, would, you know, he would come in the academy and, you know, he would run his finger across the top of the wall mat, check for dust. He would check in the bathroom for toilet paper to see if the bathroom was clean. You know, all right, guys, whose day is it to clean the mat? And again, let me reiterate, these are legends of the sport. He didn't care. You know, it was super important to him that, man, they didn't forget the little things. And I think that's not just about keeping the mat clean. That's just a representation of, man, how you should do your jiu-jitsu. You know, remember the little things. Never get too big for yourself. Don't forget where you came from. You know, and there's a ton of benefits too. But, man, it keeps you humble. It keeps you grounded. It shows respect for where you are. And, but not only that, I mean, you take pride in that. You're just taking pride in yourself, because when your academy is not just someplace you show up and train, it's someplace you take a lot of pride in. You know, I take pride in my teammates. I take pride in my academy. I take pride in my instructor. That's all super important to me. So what's important to me is this clean and presentable. So when the next new person comes in, they feel welcome. They feel like this is a place I want to be, because, man, this is well taken care of. People respect this place. This isn't, you know, some helter-skelter put together area. And, you know, something you mentioned that I didn't even consider until, you know, till you said it was, man, the conversations you have that organically just happen when you're cleaning, that whole whistle while you work mentality. We're going to go around and mop the mat and clean up, and just who knows what conversation might pop up. And it's just when you get to know your teammates, because, you know, we don't really, on the mat's really not the time to have that personal conversation of, hey, where are you from? What do you do? Tell me about your family. No, we're there to train. You know, but afterwards, that's when you can really, you know, build that rapport with your teammates. You know, hey, you want to hang out afterwards, or, you know, whatever. That's when you kind of build these friendships, is hanging out afterwards and cleaning the mat.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, you or John or somebody else, when me and Phil are cleaning the mat, you know, when we're sitting there talking about something, and maybe we don't get that, and then you come and drop a concept on us that's like, oh, crap, it's not really about the moves. It's never really about the moves. It's about the concepts of the moves. The moves come with the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes, whenever we're cleaning the mat, and maybe you or maybe John overhears Phil and I talking about something, whether it's silly or whether it's not, whether it's just, you know, we're reflecting, because that's another benefit of cleaning the mats too, is reflecting on not only your what you went over in class, but also how you're going to write the notes. Like, what steps am I going to say whenever I write the notes? Or just that time you have after to kind of let everything sink in. And the other benefit just being that you have that, if you're there till the end, you're not going to miss anything.
Right.
Right? I felt like if I wasn't cleaning the mat and I would have missed some of those concepts, I certainly wouldn't be, you know, where I'm at today, which isn't a big deal. It's just that I know those things now.
Right.
And so what I'm saying to all those, you know, and guess what? A lot of these guys, the white belts, they have no idea, like, what, you know, we were never taught, yeah, you should clean the mats, right? We're never really taught that. I just, I'm one of those people that, just like you, just like Phil, we want to go the extra yard and really kind of be in the whole experience and also contribute to the team. And so what I would say to those white belts out there, man, if you haven't taken time to stay and clean the mats, stay and clean the mats. It's going to benefit your jiu-jitsu 100%. Plus, it's also going to really show your support of the academy.
Well, and if you're sitting there thinking, like, man, how is me cleaning up going to help my jiu-jitsu? You're just lazy and want some help cleaning, you know? So... No, because what it does is, like I said, building those friendships is super important, because, man, you're going to have days, you're going to have stuff is going to come up at home. You're going to have family issues. You're going to have chores at home. you're going to have things that come up where you can't make it to jiu-jitsu, you know, and that can snowball. When you have, I missed today because I've got to get my car taken to the shop, or I missed tomorrow because I got to pick up my kid, and I missed the next day because I've got this thing at work. And you're like, well, man, I haven't spent time with the wife, so I'm going to miss the next day. So, I got to keep things cool with her. And all of a sudden, you missed a week. And you're like, all right, man, I missed a week. You know, I'll be back Monday. And then Monday comes, and you've got something else that comes up. And you're like, all of a sudden, man, you keep pushing jiu-jitsu further and further away. Sometimes what can help pull you out of that slump is you get a text or a phone call. Hey, man, we miss you. Where are you? Everything cool?
If you missed a week, I'd be like, are you dead?
Right. You know, but to reach out, hey, man, where you been? You know, we missed you on the mat. We'd love to see you. You know, hey, man, we just went over that sweep you're super awesome at, you know. I wish you were there to see it. You know, whatever.
I do that every time Jeff misses a class. I'm like, you should have been there. We went over.
It's always the best class ever, by the way. I rarely miss classes, but it's always the best class.
Best class ever. You know, and, you know, I talk about this with new people, too, that, you know, what you guys do is awesome. It's fantastic coming to all the classes that you do. But, man, like, when I talk to somebody new when they're first signing up, and this really goes out to everybody, that, man, set yourself up for success and hold yourself accountable. Like, all right, I'm going to come to two classes this week. Yeah, I just started. I'm coming to my fundamentals classes. They're an hour long. I'm going to come to Monday, Wednesday, or I'll come to this week, and next week I'll do Monday, Friday, and pencil it in. Don't give yourself an option. Pencil it in. I'm going to be there. That's 2 hours a week. That's not too much to commit. It's very easy to have success with that. If that's your, you know, set that as your first goal. Man, do that for a month. Do that for 6 weeks. You'll be like, all right, man, this is going well. I'm going to up it. I'm going to go to 3 classes a week now. Do that for a little while. All right, I'm going to up it, man. I feel good with some of this fundamental stuff. My first little bit of class and review period, I'm actually reviewing some things now. I'm going to stay and roll a little bit. I'm going to try and dip my toe in the water of rolling. And we stay for that. And that's how you build success. If you come in day one and you're like, all right, I'm going to be here for every Muay Thai class and every Judo class and every Jiu-Jitsu class, and you do that for a week or two, and then you start missing a couple, and then, you know, all of a sudden the wheels are falling off the wagon, and, you know, you feel like you failed, you don't feel like you're having success, you feel like you let yourself down, and you just let it go. You won't say you quit because it hurts to say you quit. You'll just keep paying your gym membership and not show up anymore. You know, like, it's still there. Like, yeah. You still have the possibility in the back of your head, like, I'll go back sometime. Maybe. But you never do. You know, so set yourself up for success. You know, come, you know, it's like making your bed in the morning. You know, do the little things to help make yourself successful. And be realistic with your expectations. You know, come in, do your fundamentals, come in, all right, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to stay and help clean, you know, whatever. You know, set those up, set those goals up and achieve them.
Well, and not only that, but if you're just starting out, man, if you go more than 2 or 3 times a week, you are going to be so sore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just the truth, right? And, you know, especially me starting at 46 years old, starting my campaign at 46 years old, and being 111 pounds heavier, you know, it was, I couldn't even get through the...
I remember.
Yeah, I know you remember, because, you know, you were one of the big reasons I kept coming back, Ryan. You always took me under your wing. You always took me aside. You always showed me the example that I feel like I have to live up to in the academy, because whenever I was new, you always worked with me, and you always made me feel welcome. You always, you know, it was something special in that first couple of months. I hated it whenever I got that first strike, because then I wasn't able to work with you as much, because you were always going to the newer guys. So I was like, screw those newer guys, man, I'm still here.
Don't leave me.
But that's the right move, right? I mean, and it meant so much to me, and was probably one of the big reasons I'm so obsessed with it today, is that I had that positive experience because of you, because of John, because of many of the other teammates, but particularly you. And that's the example I want to be, and that's why I want to get those new people whenever they walk in the door, make them feel welcome, make them feel wanted.
Is that why everybody's been leaving?
Possibly. It's
a possibility. But. Well, man, you become invested in each other, you know, because... And that's what hurts so much when you see people quit, and it's super frustrating. And you'll experience this as your campaign moves forward, and you know you'll have people because people don't always stick around. You know, people.
We've already seen it.
People will try, you know, and go for a little while, and then like I said, they'll start missing a day, missing 2 days. You know, they were coming 5 days a week. Now it's three. Now it's one. Now they miss 2 weeks, and they come back for that one day, and you're like, this isn't looking good. Mm. And man, to make sure you're helping those people, and you do that, and then they don't show up, and you're like, man, I just invested so much time and effort into that guy, and now he's not here. And you do that so many times, and you're like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. But then you have a success story like you, where you come in and you're this super overweight guy, and you can't shrimp down the mat without having a heart attack. You know, like I'm finding the AED, you know, I'm like studying my CPR before I come to class just to make sure I can save Jeff.
Folks, this is all true, by the way.
you know, me and John are, you know, figuring out who's doing compressions, who's doing breaths before class. And so in case Jeff goes out, we've got an action plan on how to save him, you know.
I'm glad you did, because it's touch and go there for a while.
And, but you know, it's super rewarding to see you have success, to see you cut that weight, to see you progress and get better. Man, there's nothing more rewarding than that. So it motivates you for the next however many people you're going to come and mentor that aren't going to stick with it. But, you know, the ones that do really make it worth it. And now, I mean, you guys are really valuable members of the team now. You know, a year ago, a year and a half, you weren't even here. You didn't exist, you know. So it's always important, you know, if you're training, if you're brand new, even to the school, man, say hello, shake a hand, you know, welcome somebody, just speak a word. Absolutely. You know, learn their name.
Yeah.
You know, all that's super important.
Feels terrible at that.
I am so terrible.
I'm really bad.
Like, please don't ask me your name. Like, I'm so bad. Like, I'll remember the weirdest stuff, but I'm so terrible. I'll remember your face forever.
Yeah. But, I've had like 3 or 4 year friendships with people I've never addressed them by their name. What's up, man? Just eye contact.
I relate. Yeah, I completely relate. I don't judge you at all for that. Yeah, hey, buddy, pal. Yeah.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Fella.
Good job, sport.
But, no, you make a really good point. And what you did for Jeff did for me. And again, we talk about it all the time. I know what jiu-jitsu's done for me and like how I feel about it. I do my best to try to make sure, at least give him a chance, right, to try it.
Find absolutely. It.
I mean, I'm sure all three of us took about 4 hours to decide, yeah, this is something I'm going to do.
Oh, yeah. I was instant. You know, like, instant. You have, like, for me being a bigger dude, I had a little guy, like, tool me up on the mat.
And yeah.
I'm like, man, I'm sold. Teach me this magic.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want that to happen again. Again, I don't like losing.
Right.
So yeah. You made me lose. How'd you do it? You know, I'm going to go work on it. You know? Like, I want to get better at it. So that was, yeah, like I said, I was... Just like you guys were sold instantly on it. And some people aren't, but that's okay. You know, hopefully they come back and you want to reach as many people as we can. But, and it's not just learning to defend yourself and building friendships and getting in shape, which all those things are great. But, you know, life's going to suck sometimes. Life's going to kick you in the teeth sometimes. And you're going to have outside stress and you're going to have, you know, work stress and relationship stress, and you know, you're going to have a breakup or not get the promotion you wanted, and stuff's going to happen. And I promise you, there's no better release than going in and training. Because I don't care what you've got going on in your life. If I'm choking you, you're not thinking about it. I promise you.
Not even a little.
You know, if somebody's knee's driving into your ribs, you're not thinking about whatever's going on outside. And sometimes that is a great thing, you know, to have that 1 or 2 hour escape from the world. So, I mean, the benefits are countless, and you have to train it to really understand it. But I think that's what we're trying to do here is, you know, make everyone aware of, you know, the benefits of that and help those new people coming in and the people that are actually in it and thinking about maybe moving on or not showing up, that, you know, how big of a deal it really is and how great it can be for your own personal development.
And your teammates need you too.
Absolutely. It, you know, you can't go in and train by yourself. You know, you can do a little bit, but no, you can't be in there by yourself. It takes other people.
You are so right. And with that, Ryan, thank you so much. We really appreciate you being here today. And folks out there, if you would, you want to support the podcast, people have asked me, Jeff, how do we support the podcast? And I always tell them, go like us on Podbean or iTunes or Facebook. Philly's tightening up that website, bjjcampaignpodcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
When's it going to be published?
Be a little bit, a week or so. Next week sometime.
Be published Monday. And so, so BJJ Campaign Podcast, visit the website. Make sure to, you know, if you like us, leave us a review. Leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, any of those platforms. And we appreciate your support. All the folks that, out there that I know that are doing jiu-jitsu, and they send me these little blurbs during the week, text messages saying, hey, man, you know, I had a question about this, and we talk about it. And that's making everybody, it's making us better too. So go out there. If you want to support us, like us, leave us a review. Also, support the ones who support us, which is my BJJ notes. You'll thank us for it. Whenever you go to write down and document your campaign with jiu-jitsu, utilizing my BJJ notes is really an effective way to do that. And with that,
let's go train.
We are going to train.
We are going to go train.
That's right.
I'm sure he'll feel some of my favorite techniques.
he most definitely will. So till next time, if you're not doing something to make yourself better, get out there and do it.
Feed them to the sharks right now.
Get them hype right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is on. Yeah. Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it goes.
Right.
Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's
time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know.
No.
But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.
Let's roll. Let's roll. Let's roll.